What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoce, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. I'm at the board today, but I have with me the Director of On-Air Branding and Special Events, Mike Perry from WFYI. Hello, sir.
Good evening, Matthew.
It's good to have you back.
Why, thank you. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. Busy night tonight. As soon as the show's over, I run over to the Indianapolis Museum of Art, to the Tobias Theater, to Toby, and I'll be introducing The Last Picture Show.
Cool.
Directed by former guest on WFYI's Film Sociology, Peter Bogdanovich. So, no, I'm not going to play the interview again. That would be egotistical and vain.
It's glad he could add that to his resume.
Yes, of course. He can. His life and career's now complete. No, not really. Okay. Well, we have a busy show today. There's a big film that opened this weekend, and we have a couple of Oscar nominated events that also opened in Indianapolis this weekend. And I will be doing my best to contribute to Black History Month with two films that came out on DVD. I'd say three, but we'll get to that one in just a little bit. But the other reason why I have Mike here with me, one, because he's always good company, and we like that here at Film Sociology.
Aw.
Well, it's true. But I also have to pay Mike an apology. Yes. Well, we talked about this, but we'll let the listeners in on it. Folks, you ever have that moment where you're watching a film and something gets stuck in your head? And I don't mean like watching Avatar thinking, God, this is Dances with Wolves. Not that. A song or a phrase or something like that that's just stuck in your head because something triggered it. I triggered a piece of music and a moment in a film in Mike's head because it happened to me while watching The Wolfman, which yes. opened last week. And I know you saw it over the weekend as well.
I did.
And we have to let this out. This is the kind of obscure group therapy, film therapy that we do here at Film Sociology. But if you haven't seen the film yet, and maybe you have, Benicio del Toro's character, the title character, well, his name is Lawrence. And as we find out throughout the film, he's called often by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Emily Blunt and Anthony Hopkins. Everybody. It just seems like, and this could be a potential drinking game, which is another source of fun here at Film Sociology. Not intentionally, of course.
Of course.
Anyway, as I was watching this, there is another film that popped into my head while watching, I see you're already starting. There's another film popped into my head that involves this name and a piece of music, and I'll explain what we're talking about. So anytime I heard the name Lawrence, this came into my head.
Lawrence of Arabia. He's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there. That's what I'm talking about. Well, Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music. It's music.
I've seen the movie 4 times.
And there were no words to it.
What are you
there
doing?
Are no words to that.
Did
you hear what I was saying earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
I had to cut that off.
I think it was Bill Murray who wrote lyrics to that song.
It does sound like Bill Murray's Lounge Lizard, but that is from the 1980s Floyd Muttrucks directed comedy The Hollywood Nights.
A cult classic.
It is a cult classic. I think it's not arguably, it is the most underappreciated of the slob comedies of the late 70s and early 80s.
Came out the same general time frame as like Porky's.
Well, before it was pre-Porky's, post-Animal House, and just a little timeline for you. Yes, I'm starting with an old film on film sociology. A very young Fran Drescher. This was one of her early films. She was in the other Floyd film, American Hot Wax.
Yeah.
Robert Wool's first. I want to say his first.
I think it was. I think he was credited as introducing Robert Wool.
Ah, I see. And this was that they were trying to. He was the John Belushi character, I guess, for lack of a better comparison. A very young and gorgeous Michelle Pfeiffer, as opposed to old and gorgeous Michelle Pfeiffer, always. But the big name in this film was Tony Danza.
Who's in the movie for maybe 5 minutes.
Five scenes, yeah, something like that. But it's 1965, Halloween night, and there's this car gang that they often had in Southern California, and their hangout was going to be closed. And you had two different stories. Yeah, you had the Tony Danza half, which is in the garage, and it's the serious part with the girlfriend and the friend going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then there's the goofy stuff with all the two bumbling cops, as you heard.
Gaylord Sartain.
Your
my,
guy.
My former co-star, yes.
We'll get to that a little later on, but anyway, that was stuck in my head, and so I, of course, told Mike, and he cursed me for having it stuck in his head when he watched this film
because
as well.
A couple of points, I did sing it at least loud enough for me to hear it at the theater. But you know which other thing got me in that movie?
What's that?
When Hugo Weaving calls him Mr. Talbot. The Matrix thing came back, and I couldn't help but start laughing.
But there's only one of him. There's not thousands and thousands fighting the Wolfman. Sorry. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. But I had to cleanse the show and cleanse my guest of just that.
I'm cleaner now.
Oh, I'm glad you do. Stay over there. Okay, opening in theater. Finally, it was supposed to come out in October, and there has been much talk as to why and how. But the Martin Scorsese thriller Shutter Island, based on the Dennis Lehan novel, stars Leonardo DiCaprio as a U.S. Marshal, Boston U.S. Marshal in 1954, who goes to an institution for the criminally insane to investigate an escaped patient. And I guess it has to be said, not everything is what it seems.
Give you a briefing about the institution?
All I know is it's a mental hospital.
For the criminally insane.
We take only the most dangerous, damaged patients. Ones no other hospital can manage.
You are hereby required to surrender your firearms.
We are duly appointed federal marshals.
But during your stay, you will obey protocol. Gentlemen, welcome to Shutter Island.
Marshal Daniels?
Doctor. So this female prisoner, Rachel Solando, escaped sometime in the last 24 hours.
Is she considered dangerous?
You could say that.
It's 11 miles to the nearest land and the water's freezing.
We don't know how she got out of her room.
Came back for a midnight round, she was gone.
It's as if she evaporated straight through the walls.
Who is... 7.
There are a total of, 66 patients at this facility?
That is correct, yes.
It seems Rick Mondo is suggesting that you have a 67th patient, Doctor. A lot of people know about this place, but no one will talk, you know? It's like they're scared of something.
You haven't taken any pills, have you?
seen any walking nightmares lately, Marsha.
Pull yourself together, kill you.
I've built something valuable here.
Don't you get it?
You're a rat in a maze.
Valuable things have a way of being misunderstood.
Who knows about this?
Everyone.
The nurses, the orderlies, they couldn't possibly know.
Everyone. You do understand that they can't let you leave.
Moving somewhere?
Mike, I'm depressed.
Yeah, I think we need to start drinking heavily.
I better listen to you because you're in pre-med.
I thought it was pre-law.
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
Man, okay. Full disclosure, I've never thought Scorsese has ever made a bad film. That's
I would agree with
fairly
that.
Bold. Even his weakest film, I have highly recommended. And okay, and I don't even know where to begin. First off, I can't stand the trailer because I've complained about this time and time again that it's a trailer that gives away everything. This trailer does not give this film a fighting chance.
Right.
And I've been a huge Scorsese apologist, and I know some folks have not liked film, you know, whether it's Shine a Light or Gangs of New York or The Aviator or even King of Comedy. I remember getting into a verbal exchange with another student in college about the King of Comedy. It's disappointing. It's so disappointing, and it's not. It's well shot.
Oh,
you got my girl Thelma editing it. You got Dante Spinotti's production design,
and you have some of the best character actors in the business working this film.
Oh my God! Here's the cast. You have Leonardo DiCaprio, and if you don't recognize the voices, my God, Mark Ruffalo, Ben Kingsley, one of our favorite voices here, Patricia Clarkson, Michelle Williams,
John
Carroll Lynch, Ted Levine. I mean, just an amazing cast. Great cast. And I kept trying to think, why was this film made? Did Scorsese and Paramount, are they making this for the mall crowd who has never seen the storyline before? They've never seen The Sixth Sense or The Others or any other film that has come out over the last 10, 15 years of is it live or is it Memorex and things are not as they seem? And oh, my God. And the film could have been at least 30 minutes shorter.
Scorsese doesn't do short.
Yes, he does. He, long time ago. But, from a production standpoint, it's fine. It's solid. I mean, but let's put it this way. This film makes Cape Fear look subtle. And there's so much stuff thrown at you because it's 1954 and we have, the DiCaprio character was a soldier in World War II and you have elements of the Holocaust and there is still an image of Christ. You get that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the 50s and Big Brother and mental health. I mean, there's just so much stuff that is thrown at you. And I mean, it's Oliver Stone territory. And this is Scorsese making this.
Right. I read comparisons with Scorsese directing this to Kubrick directing The Shining. At the time, it was such a departure for him.
But he's already done a thriller. He already did a thriller, and he took the remake of Cape Fear, which I actually really enjoy, and it was taking the redemption story and the story of loss and, not making the family the Cosby Show and really setting it on its own twist. And, yeah, that film's overbearing, but I actually enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that was kind of in the Angel Heart, to a certain degree, Devil's Advocate feel of you're just hitting you over the head if you hadn't figured it out by now.
Right.
And, I saw one of our favorite sources, The Onion, compared it to The Shining as well. But once you get to the big reveal, if you hadn't figured it out by then, the film couldn't end fast enough. I mean, this thing's almost 2 hours and 20 minutes, And it could have been an hour 50. Could have even been an hour 45, I think. You know, everybody in it is fine. The performances are fine. Production values are fine. It's just, for me, it's a tired script. And there's just a lot of things that are thrown at you. And I love Scorsese's visions. I love his imagery and as a director. But man, I was down.
What went into the decision-making process when I guess he first read the book? I'll go see it tomorrow morning.
I might have you back next week.
I figure it'll give me the rest of the day to get over it. But there are parts of the story that do interest me enough to at least check this out, if for no other reason, you know, because I like most of the people in it.
Oh, heck yeah.
And I'll see any Scorsese movie.
Absolutely, should be. And you know, the big talk on this was it was supposed to come out in October, mm-hmm. and then it got pushed back to February. Well, you know, originally it was, well, I think Paramount wanted to put all their eggs in the basket for the Oscars for Up in the Air. And then I remember Ed Johnson and some of my other colleagues were talking, and you know, it's being pushed to February, which is usually not a good month. And I thought, well, they're going to open a big movie in February, and I was kind of ridiculed a little bit by my peers.
Well, it could have been decent counter programming to Valentine's Day if they premiered it last week, but
that is true.
And they do have the theaters pretty much to themselves as far as new releases. There are a few movies that are new to Indianapolis.
Right, which we'll get to in a little bit. But, man, I guess it's true. Martin Scorsese, the great Martin Scorsese can't bat 1,000 in his film career. I know I have very high expectations for him, and I probably cut him some slack. And we all do that with certain directors and actors mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But, man, I just didn't think this day would come where I have to say this about a film directed by Martin Scorsese.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Man, wow. And thank you for doing the Tim Matheson silent bit, which I enjoyed, and if you know the movie, you know what it is. All right, now, we mentioned earlier, more shameless plugs. Tonight, the IMA at the Toby, 7 o'clock, I'll be doing introducing the Last Picture Show. And if you don't have plans tonight as well, at 8:30 tonight at the Art Box Gallery, which is at 10th and Senate, limited seating. You better get there quick. They are showing the, I think, Indianapolis and maybe World Midwest premiere of the documentary Still Bill, a documentary on the life of Bill Withers. Ain't No Sunshine, Lean On Me.
Yeah, that
Bill Withers. And then as soon as it's over, there's going to be the Hip Drop, a funk and soul jam by DJ Metronome, and many, many others. So that's at the Art Box Gallery, 10th and Senate tonight. So that's cool. I mean, it's from what I've heard, it's a really good documentary, and I like Bill Withers' music, so why wouldn't you?
Of course.
Now, also opening in Indianapolis, finally getting around to it, we still get some Oscar stuff coming in the town, so I don't have to review other films, even though, well, Shutter Island's the only thing that's opened. The Last Station, which stars Academy Award nominee, Christopher Plummer, Academy Award winner, Helen Mirren, Academy Award nominee, Paul Giamatti, and not an Academy Award nominee yet, but I'm sure it'll eventually happen, James McAvoy. And it's about the life, the last few years of author Leo Tolstoy and his wife, Sophia, and we have Paul Giamatti who's trying to get his hands on some of the prize. He's the top Tolstoyan follower, something like that. And James McAvoy is in this film as well, who is been told to keep an eye on Tolstoy by Paul Giamatti and by Helen Mirren. Nice work if you can get it. Give it a listen.
If you were to become Tolstoy's private secretary, you would be given a great gift. We have a lot to do if we are to get his work to the people.
So glad you're here!
I sneeze sometimes when I get nervous.
I believe that wealth corrupts us all.
It's a keystone of the movement.
Oh, God, I know all about the movement.
I want you to keep a diary. Anything
the Countess says.
The survival of our movement depends upon it.
I cannot stand by while they steal my children's inheritance.
You all think he's Christ, don't you?
What?
He thinks he's Christ.
I have a little gift for you. It's a diary.
It's right what you see around you.
What you see.
You've been keeping some
something from me.
Have I? Tolstoy does not approve of sexual relations. I know this. This would not be a problem with me. I'm a vegetarian. I am celibate.
The Countess is too interested in making a profit from your work.
Oh, you're all plotting against me in my own house.
They have a whole life together. Why do you have to deny that?
You become a victim of her romantic nonsense.
What do they know about love? I love a romance.
Well, you don't need a husband. You need a Greek chorus.
Love cannot be weak-minded. It cannot be stupid.
Well, Ma doesn't understand my father's goals.
I mean, isn't that what it's about? Freedom and love.
He's her entire life. The work in her mind is theirs together.
I've never stopped loving you.
Of course.
But God knows you don't make it easy.
I've behaved rather badly, haven't I?
The film is directed by Michael Hoffman, who gave us Restoration, One Fine Day, and many, many other films. Do you know, I didn't realize this until it happened, this is Christopher Plummer's first nomination.
Yeah, I was stunned when I heard that.
That's such a shock. So bully for him. And
it's about time.
It's about time. And now I'm saying I wouldn't be shocked if he gets tossed one for a career.
Yeah.
I mean, Christoph Waltz is really, I think, the only serious competition in this category.
And he's got to be considered the front runner, but yeah, like you said, it wouldn't surprise me if just as an award for his body of work.
Yes, which has happened many times at the Academy. So we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully enough people see this. As you heard, there's fights over where the riches are going to be. Tolstoy wanted to, at 82 or 81, wanted to just give away everything, and much to the chagrin of his voluptuous wife. Yes, I still have a soft spot for Helen Mirren, and really, who doesn't? But there are times this film, and actually this is a compliment, it does feel like a literary version of The Lion in Winter. It would be if instead of a king, you have a writer. There are some really lovely scenes with, when you have two seasoned pros like Plummer and Mirren just going at each other, I think, Lion in Winter, Heat, I think even Inherit the Wind, I think this is a boxing match. This is an acting boxing match, and just two very intense actors going at it and having a lot of fun.
Two world-renowned actors at the top of their game.
I think so.
And, Helen Mirren, what can you say about her? Ever since 2010, I've been a big...
Oh, stop. Wow. I think I can top it. Oh, Lucky Man, if you're
there you
go down there. But this is her fourth nomination. I don't know. There's still no front runner, I think, in the Best Actress category. Well, maybe Sandra Bullock, followed by Meryl Streep. But we'll break that down when it gets a little closer to that. But they are fun to watch. James McAvoy is fine. Is Kerry Condon on your list? Is that one of your correspondent subjects?
I do love my Kerry Condon ever since Rome.
I knew it.
Played my Octavia.
And she's played the role of Octavia.
Yes.
No, so anyway.
She's just a delightful actress. I've seen her in many things, and she's...
That's part of your beat.
Of my beat.
That is your thing. So, so anyway, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Go check it out. So overall, I guess, this is what I think of The Last Station.
Now that was a good movie.
It was. Now also in towns, available separately. Well, you could just go to Key Cinemas and make a day of it, but they are showing the Academy Award nominated live action and animated shorts. And they're showing the live action and the animated ones separate. So just so you know, for the live-action films, I got to see these. These, for the most part, I think it's a fun opportunity to see stuff you're not going to see anywhere else. You got, for live-action, The Door from Ireland. You have, instead of Abracadabra from Sweden, you have Kavi, which is from India. And I believe this was also at the International Film Festival, if you get a chance to go check that out. Miracle Fish from Australia and The New Tenants from Denmark. So here's what I think of the live-action films.
Now that was a good movie!
Now, for the animated shorts, you have French Roast from France, about a businessman in a Parisian cafe. You have Sleeping Beauty from Ireland. And I didn't have the credit, but it sounds like it's Jennifer Tilly as a grandmother telling her version of Sleeping Beauty. You have The Lady and the Reaper from Spain, which is produced by Antonio Banderas, among others, about a widow who choice between going with the Grim Reaper and going with the doctor who's saving her life. Logorama from Argentina, which is an action film, but the entire city is animated and characters are corporate logos. So let's put it this way. You have two Michelin men on a stakeout from a very nasty Ronald McDonald. And you know, when all of the extra characters are the big pin person with the big head looking like Marvin the Paranoid Android. So, yeah, I'm wondering how they got away with pulling this off.
Well, being branding director here, I'm going to have to check this out.
I think you will have to check that out.
I think that's what I'm saying on Sunday then.
There you go. And probably our front runner and our favorite, the new Wallace and Gromit, A Matter of Loaf and Death. They are bread makers, and there's a woman who is, as we find out, is a serial killer of bread makers and wants her baker's dozen.
So all you British Telly Club fans, go check that out.
And apparently on top of this, if this wasn't enough for the event at the Key Cinemas, you also get Poland's The Kinematograph, I hope I'm saying it right, Canada's Runaway, and Pixar's Partly Cloudy. That was the short feature that came with Up. So that's a full day of global animation here in town, the Oscar-nominated animated shorts.
Yes.
And they am also in Shutter Island. So, okay, we're going to take a short break, and then, yes, my contribution to Black History Month on DVD. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci. That's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Mike Perry, the director of on-air branding and special promotions, here with me. How are you?
I'm good.
I have to have you on more often.
Yes, you do.
Thank you. I understand that. Tonight, if you get a chance, I will be at the IMA at the Toby Theater at 7 o'clock to introduce the film The Last Picture Show. Of course, Still Bill is going on at the Art Box Theater tonight at 8:30. At the Toby next week, Friday, February 26th, this is worth checking out, the Harold Lloyd films 1 Week and Safety Last with live accompaniment from the 30-piece Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. That's an event. That's definitely worth checking out. And then on Sunday at 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock, they're showing two films about photography. They're showing, and I said this in my introduction last week, I want a marquee just so they could have this up at the IMA. They are showing the films Fur and Pecker. That's a John Waters film, yep. Folks. I didn't pick it. Don't come after me. You can come after me, but you know nothing you can do about it. Okay. Well, this is my contribution to Black History Month, and I dedicate this segment to Abdul Hakim Shabazz because, we have fun about this. Finally, on DVD, this did not come to Indianapolis in theaters. I'm stunned it didn't. I'm really disappointed it did not. But better late than never, the 1970s blaxploitation Valentine, Black Dynamite.
All you suckers gather round. There's a brand new movie coming to town. So get on up and check the scene of the smoothest, baddest mother to ever hit the big screen. Main man, Black Dynamite. He's super cool and he know kung fu. drives a $5,000 car and wears a $100 suit.
You're so righteous.
This is also true.
And when it comes to the ladies, he's out of sight.
Let me guess. You want any brothers thinking goodbye on a wink and a smile, huh? What about the smile?
I am smiling.
Black Dynamite.
Never in the history of the game has there been such devastation.
The CIA needs Black Dynamite now more than ever.
We need you, Black Dynamite, now more than ever.
I thought I told you hunkies from the CIA that Black Dynamite was out of the game.
And he's better than Shell, Superfly, and the Mac put together. But when the mob kills his brother,
your death will not go unavenged.
And put the dope on the street.
It's my nephew Bucky. He OD'd.
He's back in the game and he's playing for keeps.
I am declaring war on anybody who sells drugs in our community.
But Black Dynamite, I sell drugs in the community.
He killed my first dealer. I want him dead now.
So if you crave satisfaction, then dig this action. Guaranteed to put your ass in traction. Black, black, stack, attack, and match. Backtrack, slapjack, boot black, flashback, ramsack, jam pack, and steel coming back.
You see where I'm coming from, you dive mother.
Black Dynamite, starring all-star running back Ferrante Jones, fashion model Tambula Takar, William T. Michelson, Ronnie Sinatra, Little Tiny Tiggs, Junebug, Bo Willie Peters, and me. That's bad, Bullhorn. Black Dynamite! Rated R.
Yes, it's rated R.
So how many weigh-ins are in this movie?
None.
None?
Not a one.
I'm shocked.
I know you're shocked. You think they have the market on this this genre. Well, now those who are longtime listeners of Film Sociology or those who just know me, I'm a huge blaxploitation fan. I thank my father for taking me to these films when I was a child. That's a whole other subject. But this film, everybody's asking, is how is this compared to I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, of course, yeah. with the entire Wayans family. And, it's more sincere, and I would say this film, it looks and is shot more like a Grindhouse, one of the Grindhouse films, than one of the Airplane films. Because, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, which I still love and I still enjoy, and yes, I own it on DVD, still needs a two-disc special edition. But it is played far much goofier. You have far sillier things going on in that film compared to this. There's a little bit in this one, but I think the look of it, for me, of course, I'm like, well, that's from a Jim Brown film. That's from a Fred Williamson film. Of course, there's some homage to Enter the Dragon. There is a ridiculous climax that does involve the Honky House and who was in the Honky House at the time these films were being made. And nunchucks. That's all I want to say. I don't want to give those away, but there's lots of familiar. I mean, Michael J. White, are you fans of Spawn, is the title role of the football player turned actor. Nicole Sullivan, Cedric Yarborough, John Sally, Arsenio Hall. It's got an original score, but I mean, these people know their blaxploitation, and they know it really well. And it's just fun to see the knowledge of this and being able to use the silly. I mean, just watching the Fred Williamson films and the Jim Brown films. I mean, there's some silly stuff in there, and I still love watching it.
When I first saw the trailer, the thing that struck me is it's as if the Wayans and Tarantino made a movie.
Kinda, and we're able to restrain each other.
Yes.
And have the right tone. I mean, that's Abdul said this earlier. There's a fine line between spoof and caricature, and I think. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka was a caricature, albeit very fun, and this is a spoof, and it's just really well made, and just a lot. I was laughing a lot in this film. So if you're into So Bad It's Good, or you're into really knowledgeable Valentines, if you're a fan of Grindhouse, and by the way, still waiting for the full Grindhouse effect with all the trailers. So you know, you directors of the trailers, you know, suck it up and let's get this on disc, okay? Not to mention the entire Kill Bill in its chronology. Anyway, we'll write about that later. But anyway, go rent Black Dynamite. In fact, I think I'm going to go buy it very soon.
Yes, 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 yes!
Indeed. Now, also on DVD this week, a documentary I was looking forward to because, well, who else to talk about this film than yours truly and my guest here? The Chris Rock documentary Good Hair about, well, the hair. Black female hair industry here in this country. Take a listen.
What's your definition of good hair?
Somebody looks relaxed and nice.
If your hair is relaxed, white people are relaxed. If your hair is nappy, they're not happy.
Oh, God.
This October, Chris Rock will take you back to your roots.
Just yesterday, my daughter came into the house and said, Daddy, how come I don't have good hair? I wonder how she came up with that idea.
Within the black community, if you have good hair, you're prettier or better than. The lighter, the brighter, the better.
They want to go like this, like Farrah Fawcett.
There's so many pressures to straighten your hair.
Look at my ring, still there. Relax is the chemical that will take a black woman's hair from this and change it into this.
It's kind of like a torture session.
Could you tell us how dangerous relaxer is?
Sodium hydroxide will burn through your skin.
So that can's got a good perm.
This whole side was burnt off, and that's how the asymmetrical look came in with all that. But
so you saying your hair's addicted to relaxers?
I am on the creamy crack.
Creamy crack.
So what's in your hair now?
This is a weave.
This is a weave. Two pieces here, you know, like extensions. Like that.
The black hair business is a $9 billion business.
One of these can run you $5,000.
Well, I have a layaway plan.
So you can lay away the
weave. That's right. Have you ever put your hand through a black woman's hair?
Hell no, not a black woman.
You just don't touch it.
Do not touch my weave.
No.
Does your wife let you touch her hair?
The question is, do I let her touch mine?
Weave sex is a little awkward.
What do you do?
I guess stay on top.
This is a 7,000-pound back to relax.
This will last Prince about a month.
Get ready to go around the world.
Right now, I have Indian hair.
Human hair is India's biggest export.
Minimum 10 inches to 14.
10 inches and better.
Yes.
It's like porno.
In the award-winning new comedy that Vanity Fair calls hilarious.
Has anybody ever tried to steal your hair?
No.
If you see some black women, just run the other way. What I really wanted to know, if I could make any money selling black hair. Black hair! Would you like to buy some black hair?
They don't want to know that you don't ever cut like this. You make sure the hair's straight, look more natural.
So my nappy hair is not worth anything.
Good hair.
My advice for men when they're making love to a woman who has weave is keep your hands on them.
We don't play the red band trailers here on the show, okay? Even on HD. Sorry.
That is unfortunate, especially for this movie. But
I was thoroughly enjoyed this film for a couple reasons. I knew it was a huge business. I didn't realize it was that big a business and it was that expensive.
It's not surprising.
Surprising, but wow. You know, you see the scene with the relaxer and what the chemicals in it do to your hair. You know, I think the first thing I remember seeing of that was the scene in Malcolm X where, you know, they keep it on as long as they can until it starts to burn and then you take care of it. Man. The other part of the film that is interesting for me was there is a hair competition. They have this elaborate theatrical hair styling competition in Surprise, Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of documentaries where with the competitive thing, King of Kong, Spellbound, Wordplay, films like that. And it's fine. And, you know, the scope of what these folks do to compete for this competition is a bit... Well, very funny. It is one of those films that you can either appreciate it, like Trekkies, you can appreciate it, you can be fascinated by it, and you can still kind of point and giggle at it, you know, especially finding all the Indian hair and, well, we talked about weave sex, which I didn't think was all going to be brought up.
Yeah,
I know. But no, Chris Rock does a good job. He's very funny, and for some, I'm sure this is no surprise, but for me, this was pretty fascinating to watch. So
if you have a hair horror story of your own and would like to share it with us.
It might be. Like Salt and Pepper talked about how one hairstyle came into play via an accident. So, yeah. But anyway, this is worth renting big time.
Now that was a good movie.
It was. Almost the other way if it weren't for the... Anyway. Also on DVD this week, Law Abiding Citizen.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hear that?
Go wash up for dinner, Buffy.
Okay, I got it.
We gotta get out of here. What are you doing? Come on.
The Shelton case, where are we?
Let's make the deal.
They killed a little girl, Nick.
Some justice is better than no justice at all.
You need to tell the husband.
No, I don't understand. With Darby's testimony, Ames will go to death row.
What?
The jury's gonna believe me.
The deal is done. I'm sorry. This is just how the justice system works.
A painless execution has turned into something out of a horror film.
The machine was corrupt.
Who could have done this?
I killed your friend Ames in prison, but I wanted to keep you all for myself.
Your heart is beating so fast. Me too.
Did you murder Clarence Darby?
He killed my wife and child.
I guess we're done.
Counselor,
you might want to cancel your 12:30 lunch with Judge Roberts.
Hello? You and whoever else you have helping you are gonna pay.
Now you're the one who makes deals with murderers, yeah. So I've come to make mine. Release me.
For what?
Or I kill everyone.
We have him locked up and he's still killing people?
I found a couple of contract payments from the Department of Defense.
Tell us what we're dealing with. A spy?
Spies are a dime a dozen. Clyde is a brain, and he was the best.
If Clyde wants you dead, you're dead.
We're gonna lock the city down, put an armed cop on every corner.
He's in jail because he wants to be in jail.
I'm gonna bring the whole system down on your head. It's gotta be biblical.
You will end this.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Jamie Foxx, Gerard Butler, Colm Meaney, Bruce McGill.
Oh, love Colm Meaney.
Love Colm Meaney and Bruce McGill. Viola Davis, who's got nothing to do as the mayor of Philadelphia. It's directed by F. Gary Gray, who gave us the remake of The Italian Job, Set It Off, The First Friday. And I will give the film this. It keeps moving.
It does. And it keeps you guessing up until about the last 5 minutes.
Right. Well, but you hear in the film it's like a horror movie. It's basically if you took Scorsese's Cape Fear and mixed it with Saw.
With a little touch of Dexter thrown in.
I guess so, yeah. It's
quite the run that Mr. Butler's on right now.
Wow. Yeah. What a...
Gamer and this.
Ugly
and
Truth.
The Ugly Truth and
not.
I'm sure they'll get some audience for The Bounty Hunter, but
My gosh, yeah, this is not a good year. Not a good year.
I'd hate to see him peak with 300 and then.
Yeah, that would be a shame. That was a shame. So, but yeah, it's I guess you have to really suspend your disbelief when it comes to these elaborately plotted executions and blow-ups.
They could not convince me that this could actually take place in this, you know, part of the time-space continuum.
Right, and they don't age. Because it also jumps 10 years later. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you're in the Saw, or I guess another film I can't believe I'm comparing this to, but it is, but 12 Rounds, which I had to see, you didn't have to.
I didn't, and I chose not to.
And that's really okay. Yeah. That's fine. So yeah, and Jamie Foxx, I don't know what, he's been down a bad patch of work as well.
Yeah.
Post-Dreamgirls is just... Whew. So, here you go.
Turn it off. Turn it off. Turn it off!
All right, a few other DVD notes and Blu-ray notes. I couldn't remember. I'm not telling you, but I have a Blu-ray player now.
Congratulations. I just joined the family last month.
Did you?
Yeah. I had to get it for Star Trek.
I was
not going to watch Star Trek on my old DVD player.
I understand that. Now I just need to get people to start sending me Blu-rays. Hello, everybody. A few other DVD notes. Wow. If you don't have this, I don't know who does or who, but Warner Brothers has put out a box set, Clint Eastwood, 35 films, 35 years.
For $3,500 or something.
Actually, $180, according to The Onion. Problem is, I already have most of these.
That's where I am. You know, most of the ones I would want to see.
I don't need The Rookie and Pink Cadillac. So
I can do without orangutans for the most part.
That's really all right. Also out, although I thought this was already out, but on Blu-ray and on DVD, the Dirty Harry collection, which I thought we might already have that. I wouldn't mind.
Probably not on Blu-ray yet, though.
Oh, well, so, maybe. Yeah. So, also on Blu-ray from Warner Brothers, and I've read it's not not a special deluxe edition. It is kind of just putting it onto a Blu-ray, so take that for what it's worth. Goodfellas. Mm-hmm. Absolutely adore. Good Scorsese film.
Yep.
Excellent Scorsese film.
The Scorsese film for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. For, and possibly the best film of the 90s. Also on Blu-ray, the original Lady Killers.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Guinness, Peter Sellers.
Saw that on AMC just the other day, or TNT just the other day.
There you go. So that's also out there as well. Okay, we are going to take a short break and then more with Mike Perry. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
And welcome, Mike Perry. <You're>, this is a great setup.
I know. I just don't know where to go there.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Matthew Sozi, along with Mike Perry, the Director of On-Air Branding and Promotions here at WFYI. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. As soon as the show's over, you can see me at the Tobias Theater, the Toby, at the IMA at 7 o'clock. I'll be introducing the 1971 Peter Bogdanovich film, The Last Picture Show. What a cast. And I was thinking of, there were two other films I thought of that were similar as far as, what a springboard for so many people. I thought of Diner.
Yeah.
And The Outsiders.
Yeah.
Think about, I mean, and with in the case of Last Picture Show, Jeff Bridges, and this was his first nomination, Cybill Shepherd, Timothy Bottoms, Randy Quaid, Eileen Brennan, Ellen Burstyn, who was also nominated for this film, and, of course, the Oscars for Ben Johnson and Cloris Leachman, well-deserved on both. And, you know, Bogdanovich's second film after Targets, and what started a pretty impressive streak, followed by What's Up, Doc? And Paper Moon, and then, of course, things went tumbling down with Daisy Miller at Long Last Love and Nickelodeon. So, but and it was I watched getting ready for this film tonight. I was able to watch Raging Bulls and Easy Rider's Raging Bulls, which was of course about how directors took over the studios in the late '60s, early '70s. And as it turned out, as I turn up my black socks and tell you kids to get the hell off my lawn, probably the best era for film in history.
Yeah, I'd agree with that opinion. I'd agree with that.
So enjoy that. So if you get a chance, go check that out. A few other notes. Actress Catherine Grayson just passed today at the age of 88, known for such films as Andy Hardy's Private Secretary and Voices String Anchors Away with Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra, which is actually on my DVR library, which I'm going to go check that out. Also, Till the Clouds Roll By, Siegfried Follies, Two Sisters from Boston, Midnight Kiss, Toast of New Orleans, Showboat, Kiss Me Kate. So this is Love and Desert Song and Lovely to Look At, and her last film in 1956, The Vagabond King. So salute to Catherine on that one. One other thing, well, because I played it earlier, and I want to play it again because I want Mike to tell us this story again. This is we love brushes with greatness and great in our own heart. So give a listen to this.
Lawrence of Arabia, he's an English guy. He came to fight the Turkish.
Okay, Clark, right there. That's what I'm talking about. Lawrence of Arabia doesn't have any lyrics to it. Doesn't have any words.
What do you mean doesn't have lyrics?
It's music. Really? It's music.
I've seen the movie four times.
And there were no words to it.
What do you
there
mean?
Are no words to that.
Did
you hear what I was singing earlier?
Somewhere I know that somebody, I think, wrote lyrics to this song.
That is from the 1980 comedy, The Hollywood Nights. We talked about it earlier. And you know, well, you got to hang out with one of those voices, correct?
Yes, I did. When I was living down in Nashville, Tennessee, I was working at the Fox station there. And the producers of Ernest Goes to Jail
Wow.
came to us and were looking for people to be extras. And our job was to be a film crew, a camera crew.
Shocking.
And the climactic scene where Ernest goes through the roof of the bank was shot in my neighborhood at my bank,
mm-hmm.
and if you pay close attention, you can catch all 10 frames of me holding my camera and then looking up at the, you know, following the camera up into the sky where, thanks to the wonders of CGI at the time,
mm-hmm.
Ernest goes shooting sky high, but did get a chance to meet Gaylord Sartain. Spend a lot of time at the buffet table.
Did you dork out about the were you the Chris Farley show about asking about Hee Haw?
I asked him what that was like because in fact the show had I think just gone out of production or was in the latter days.
Right.
He didn't chat long, but
okay.
But it was a fun experience.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. But yeah, Hollywood Nights, that needs a two-disc special edition.
Yeah, it really needs to be re-released.
That would be cool. That would be very enjoyable because, I can't say it, but that film not only brought me new appreciation for Lawrence of Arabia,
mm-hmm.
and the first time
and Volare.
Yes, and I was about to say, and Volare, which we cannot do, can't emulate it, can't imitate it, and really probably shouldn't.
It's best to be experienced
but
firsthand. So,
that was on HBO, like in the early incarnations of HBO. It was on.
They played
it
all the
constantly.
Time.
And so I had to have been, 11, 12? And yeah. I'll just say the Volare.
I was a bit older.
I know you were, but anyway. But when it got to that moment, when you're an 11, 12-year-old caffeinated dork boy,
mm-hmm.
oh, man, that for a long time was the funniest thing I think I'd ever seen in the film.
Just some classic bits. So if you haven't, subjected yourself to the Hollywood Nights,
you really
should. It works on a lot of levels. If you like Porky's, you'll like this. I doubt that. I wouldn't say it's as knee slapping, laugh out loud funny as Porky's was on the whole, but there are some choice scenes in it.
And there's a couple, actually some semi-serious moments, especially the Tony Danza stuff and with the friends and everything like that. So this was an attempt, I think. I wonder what Mr. Apatow thought of this film. I'm sure he saw it just as many times as we did when it first came out.
In fact, he should remake this movie.
Oh, my gosh. Who gets to be Michelle?
Oh,
it would be Leslie Mann.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I
want Leslie Mann on roller skates. Well, really?
Leslie Mann should play the PTA mom. That's
only hotter.
Oh, only hotter.
Oh, the one-armed violinist.
Yes.
That's where I learned the one-armed violinist. And the
we
old
can't
guy.
Describe
we
that
can't,
either.
We can't describe that either. So, don't you love this?
Yes.
Okay. No, we need a chance. How did you like the family therapy dad issues film that was The Wolfman?
Oh. To be honest, I thought it was a decent tribute to the original.
Really?
But I felt they could have taken it farther than they did. I thought it was a bit too long. I thought it maybe focused too much on daddy issues. Not nearly enough Emily Blunt.
Well, that's in your opinion.
Yes,
I kind of back you up on that one.
But saying that, I didn't buy their relationship at all.
They have nothing to do.
They have nothing to do. And but Benicio del Toro, you know, has that lovable lug thing down.
It seemed he looked bored at times as well, or angst ridden and bored.
Yeah. He severely underplayed this. He didn't do anything that made me care what happens to him at all.
No.
You got to identify with your hero, and even though, you know, a wolf man is, you know, stretched for a hero.
No, but still
you
got
to empathize with him, and it just wasn't there.
No. I mean, and I think they tried to lean on that with the father stuff. And by the way, that climax was really silly. I don't want to give it away, but it's silly.
It is silly.
It felt very silly.
I felt like Hopkins was slumming in this one.
Hopkins is one of our prime slummers of this generation. Let's not forget
that. Well, even by Hopkins' standards.
Oh, really?
He was slumming in this one. He just kind of mailed it in.
And he gets to choose some scenery, as does Hugo Weaving to a certain degree.
True, but I wish, as much as I love Hugo Weaving's work, I wish he had strayed a little bit further away from his Matrix character, because it just kept reminding me of him over and over and over again.
And I think if this film had been shorter, because the scene in the sanitarium felt like a build-up for a good climax, except it's just another 30 minutes, and I thought, well, if you have Anthony, if you take out the Anthony Hopkins character... if you make it 90 minutes, then you don't have the Anthony Hopkins character at all.
But if you make it 90 minutes, you've got your sequel. Because if they'd wrapped it up at the sanitarium,
oh my gosh,
then they'd have a franchise for a couple more movies.
So I guess, can we at least say it's better than Van Helsing?
Well, yes. Yeah, of course.
Okay, but I still think this is how we are on this film.
No! No, 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 no! No! No, 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 no! No!
Now, you were bringing up something, because I often ask Mike, what are you watching lately? And last week, I was able to mention this at the Toby, and we're short on time, but we'll get to it. You know, I thought, because of films like The Dirty Dozen and The Great Escape and Magnificent Seven, that no producer didn't try to make an action movie with Sophia Loren, Claudia Cardinale, Diane Carroll, Anne Margaret, Catherine Deneuve. And I got a feeling you'd want Anne Francis in this in the estrogen brigade as well. She would have qualified, I think, back then.
Yeah, she would have.
So
today's Anne Francis Day on Turner Classic Movies. Right before we did the show, I just finished watching the end of Forbidden Planet, and they were going into the Blackwood board jungle.
She's great in...
And, of course, I have the Honey West collection.
Well, of course you do, and I borrow it from you, but you won't let me.
I'll bring it in for you. Just bring it, give it back
in the
state I give it to you.
Well, I have my smoking jacket. God, I think the first thing I saw her do, you ready for this? And this is also not on DVD, and it really should, the Burt Reynolds film Impasse from 1969.
Wow. That's going back way.
He's like a weapons runner in the Philippines. This was pre-Deliverance. He was doing a lot of B movies, like Operation CIA and Skullduggery with the beautiful Susan Clarke. And Miko Mayama was in this. I think Burt was dating her at the time. This is one to look out for. Anne's in this one as well.
For you children of the 80s, she was also the mother figure in Riptide, the series with Perry Kane and Joe Penny.
Yeah. Okay, now my head's swimming. All right, we got to get things. I got to head out to over to the IMA for the last picture show. Mike Perry, thank you for sitting in, as always.
Always a pleasure.
And these, of course, are words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point. And WFYI.org. Monday, the show is available as a podcast. Bye-bye.